So I spoke a little bit about Luke Perry not too long ago, and the actress Shannon Doherty, who played Brenda Walsh in the TV show Beverly Hills 90210, recently died from breast cancer. I loved her in the great 1989 movie Heathers, directed by Michael Lehman, where Shannon Doherty played one of the mean Heather girls. She eventually left Beverly Hills 90210 and went on to star in the TV show Charmed, where she reportedly feuded with Alyssa Milano. Her life and her career had its ups and downs. And I'm sure she had her good moments and her bad moments like us all. But, you know, she seemed like a genuine person who had maybe, like, learned from past mistakes. And the cancer diagnosis kind of revealed her character. She said at the time, "I'm not done with living. I'm not done with loving. I'm not done with creating. I'm not done with hopefully changing things for the better." She had a podcast called Let's Be Clear, where she kind of tried to explore some of her past relationships, betrayals, and her own flaws. And I guess she divorced from her husband just a day or two before she actually died. But on her podcast, she once mentioned that the list of people that shouldn't be able to attend her funeral was way too long. She said, "There is a lot of people that I think would show up that I don't want there. They have their reasons and good for them. But they don't actually like me enough to show up at my funeral, but they will because it's the politically correct thing to do and they don't want to look bad. I kind of want to take that pressure off of them." We all know Hollywood is full of artificial relationships, artificial friends. And I admire how Shannon was like, "Okay, let's cut the Hollywood bullshit, okay? This is my funeral. This is my ending. And hey, no hard feelings, but you're not invited to join in." I like how Shannon Doherty was able to control her narrative at the end. So rest in peace, Shannon. And I know I said a few weeks ago that Sunnyvale isn't so bad. But like Arnold Schwarzenegger says in the 1985 movie Commando, "I lied." Arnold, playing the character John Matrix, is holding this other character, Sully, over a cliff. Sully is played by the kind of spooky-looking but awesome David Patrick Kelly, who freaked me out as a kid in the 1984 movie Dreamscape with Dennis Quaid, directed by Joseph Rubin. Joseph Rubin also directed the kind of fun 1987 horror movie The Stepfather with Terry O'Quinn as the title character. But yeah, check out any of those. And the line in Commando is, "Remember, Sully, when I promised to kill you last?" And then Sully says, "That's right, Matrix, you did." And then Arnold says, "I lied." And like lets him go. He like falls down the cliff and shit. But back to Sunnyvale. Man, I had the longest day at work the other day. I just wanted to get home. I just wanted to get to 7-Eleven and buy some White Claws, you know. Yes, they are terrible, but the 7-Eleven is so close to my apartment, you know, and I just don't want to go stand in the line in Safeway or something. But anyway, I was like hitting these long-ass lights, and it's like if the people in front of me were driving somewhat near normal speed, we would have actually gotten through some of the lights. But whoever designed the traffic light system in Sunnyvale should be prosecuted by The Hague. And to paraphrase the famous line from Chinatown, "Forget it, Mark. It's Sunnyvale." Oh, and quickly, I try not to look at the number of listeners I get because the point of this whole thing was just to do something, you know, like a project. But I did notice that someone in Lead, South Dakota is still listening. He's on board for now, like Kurt Russell, still waiting on Michael Biehn. So I salute you, Lead, South Dakota. I love the fucking name of your town, and zero pressure. You know, if you find the podcast to be crap, please dip out. But I thank you. And hey, I do have an email for this podcast. It's never been used, so feel free to send a suggestion, complaint, recipes, or questions about vitamins. It's markd, M-A-R-C-D, at youaremydensity.com. Yes, that domain was available. Can you believe it? Anyway, on with the show.
You are my density. You are my density.
So anyway, my birthday is coming up, and quickly, I got a card for my birthday from the leasing office, along with a balloon. And I was like, "Oh, thank you." And then I got to my apartment, I'm like, "What the fuck am I going to do with this balloon?" Balloons are fun for like 3 minutes, and then you're like, "Okay, go away." It's currently sitting in my apartment. I figured popping it would be a little tacky or maybe just bad luck, so I'll just let it deflate on its own. Speaking of birthdays, according to the Austrian, somewhat esoteric thinker and architect Rudolf Steiner, he split a person's life span into 7 cycles. Steiner's system ends when a person is 63, and weirdly enough, he himself died at 64. I'd like to live a little bit longer than 63, you know. And speaking of not living, I read that the Grateful Dead is getting a Kennedy Center honor, but it was funny. The article said it would be awarded to the surviving members of the Grateful Dead. There was something funny about that sentence. But anyway, I went to a steakhouse for my birthday with a few nurse friends the other day. This one was in San Mateo, and man, it had a great vibe, classy, kind of old school. And the best part is they have a bunch of old movie posters on the walls, along with some old-time celebrities pictures. So when I sat down, I was looking around at some of the posters, some westerns, some disaster movies. And then I looked to my left, and right in front of me is the poster for the great movie Chinatown from 1974. The poster has a drawing of Jack Nicholson kind of looking over his right shoulder, cigarette dangling, smoke wafting, and yeah, I was like, okay, it was meant for me to be there that night. And my friends took a picture of me near the beginning there, and you know what? I actually didn't look bad. It's one of the few pictures of me in existence that I've recently seen where I don't look like a haggard misfit. My mom said the picture made me look distinguished, which is pretty much a code word for saying you look old. But yeah, the restaurant was solid, great martinis. The oysters were a bit off, but that can happen. And the steak tartare was prepared tableside, and the waitress put like so much work into it. I was like, okay, take a break. It looks fine. You can stop now. And all of that work for such a small dish. But anyway, it was great. And my friends mentioned to the waitress that my birthday was coming up, and she asked if I had any words of wisdom or anything. And I said in my best Jack Nicholson impersonation, always be nice to waiters. And I kind of nailed it. So we went after to this bar right by us, an appropriately divey spot. Legit bar goers, no Google types. It had a pool table and a jukebox. So we played some pool, drank too much. And I was just tossing cash into the jukebox. I played Soundgarden's The Day I Tried to Live on repeat. Some Aerosmith. And I can guarantee I'm the only person in that bar ever to have played Superchunk's Detroit Has a Skyline. I think I actually played the acoustic version. And then I thought about Weezer, and just one of the songs I used to completely jam out to is Say It Ain't So from Weezer's self-titled debut album, aka the Blue Album from 1994. The song rocks. The bridge is so goddamn awesome. I also dig some Rivers Cuomo's solo stuff. We'll mention that at some point. But yeah, I was just singing along with my pool stick in complete guitar mode. The bridge is out of this world. And there's an amazing live performance of just vintage Weezer playing Say It Ain't So on the David Letterman Show from 1995. And there's some backstory to this performance. The lead singer Rivers Cuomo had just undergone some surgery on his leg or something to lengthen it, and he was wearing a leg brace in this performance. I guess Rivers was born with one of his legs shorter than the others, which is a very Rivers thing to do. But anyway, he wasn't going to be able to move around, and he was really like self-conscious about the performance. But yeah, you got to see the video. Rivers is just kind of planted, stuck there, not moving much. But holy hell, the bassist makes up for his lack of movement. I mean, the bassist is so over the top. It's like Jim Carrey level insanity. And, you know, I don't love all Weezer, but man, Weezer is just that in that sweet spot of when I was growing up, and they will always have a place in my heart. And as you listen to The Bridge, I guess Rivers' biological father was a mess. He bailed and later became a preacher. And then the lyric, "This bottle of Stevens," refers to his stepfather, Stevens Bottle, who I guess was also a drinker and kind of a mess. I always thought it was like a brand of whiskey or something, like Stevens, a bottle of Stevens, but now it makes more sense. And here's a little bit of that song. The song is slightly out of my register, to be honest, but I feel like singing it lower would be a cop-out, so be prepared for some dicey moments. Dear Daddy, I write you, in spite of years of silence, you cleaned up, found Jesus, things are good, oh so I hear. This bottle of Stevens awakens ancient feelings, like father, stepfather, the son is drowning in the flood. Yeah, 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 yeah. Say it ain't so, whoa, whoa, my love is a life taker. Wasn't too bad. And speaking of Dear Daddy, I mean, we all go through it eventually, but you know, you never get over the loss of your father, you know, or your mother, but my mother will never die. But yeah, sometimes there are just waves of memory that overtake me, or I just try to put into perspective the massive figure in my life that was my dad. And I completely respected my father. He had his flaws, but was a nice guy, funny, and great with people. He wouldn't bullshit you. And for all of my fuck-ups, he was never really angry at me. He would just be more disappointed, which is so much more devastating to me than if he had just been angry. And yeah, my dad is always on my mind. And hey, who doesn't love the Pet Shop Boys rendition of Always On My Mind, originally recorded by Brenda Lee? But yeah, I love it. Little things I should have said and done, I never took the time. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. So anyway, we stayed too late at the bar, drank too much, and we all left at one point, said our goodbyes, and each went on our way. Presumably everyone was going in the right direction. Well, everyone was, except for me. So I had parked like 5 minutes away, and I confidently walked up the street. I kind of lost track of time, and eventually I looked around and was like, where the fuck am I? It was almost like a direct shot from the restaurant to my car. Problem is, my dumb brain forgot we went to another location, and I just blew it. It kind of reminded me of the scene from The Naked Gun where Frank Drebin, played by Leslie Nielsen, is like walking, trying to like think about stuff, and he keeps walking and walking around, and finally he ends up in like a weird fucking field or something. He's like, and where the hell was I? And I literally called my buddy Zach, who had been with us, and I was like, dude, I'm completely lost. I was like, hey, can you stay on the phone while I figure this out? I don't know. I became like a pathetic teenager at that point, and I don't know shit about San Mateo, but anyway, I eventually found my way to my car. And what should have been like a 5 minute walk turned into like maybe a 40 minute walk, which in hindsight is probably good because the time I got back to my car, I was in okay shape to drive. So it was a blessing in disguise. And the phrase blessing in disguise first appeared in some old ass 1746 hymn by James Harvey. But anyway, I've always loved the phrase. But for some random ass reason, when I started driving home, I thought of the band Bad Religion. Haven't heard them in probably years. And anyway, I listened to them the whole way home. But anyway, here's some of Bad Religion's Generator from the album Generator from 1991. It's just got some over-the-top vocals with just a ridiculous opening, but I fucking love it. Like a rock, like a planet, like a fucking atom bomb. How good is that? And hey, I read an article on bears in the newspaper, and it was saying, you know what to do if you come across a bear? You should stand as big as possible and raise your arms up. But a couple were funny to me. One was like, drop any food you might have on you. And I was thinking, okay, lady, if I see a bear near me, you think the fucking Fig Newtons in my back pocket is going to be the top of my mind? And then this one is great. Get into a building. And I'm like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. If there was a building near me, I would already be in it. I mean, bears are usually in like parks and mountains, not like right next to a fucking Holiday Inn or something. I mean, you don't usually see bears on Fifth Avenue, though you will come across some bears on Wall Street if you catch my drift. Some bears, along with some bulls and some wolves. And recently I revisited the Canadian horror movie Visiting Hours. See how I did that? From 1982, directed by the dude with the best last name ever, Jean-Claude Lord. I mean, Christ, how is your fucking last name Lord? Bold fucking move, friend. But it's about a deranged woman-hating maniac who is stalking some journalist and ends up injuring her. But she ends up in the hospital, and he continues his mission to destroy her. Okay, so the journalist is played by Lee Grant. William Shatner plays another newsman. And amazingly, William Shatner was up for the leading man role of the psycho in this movie. And they only had one more person to audition. But unfortunately for William Shatner, that man was Michael Ironside. It was like, okay, game over, Shatner. It's the fucking Ironside. I mean, Michael Ironside is just legend. Such a menacing dude. He's kind of a big guy and just kind of exudes evil, but also, like, he's undeniably badass. And, of course, we all know and love Michael Ironside from David Cronenberg's often-mentioned Scanners from 1981. And speaking of my Scanners game idea, you still haven't called me back, Mattel. I mean, I was just kidding about not wanting those millions. That was a joke. Actually, at this point, I would settle for 500 grand. But yeah, Visiting Hours is kind of well done. Nicely directed, Mr. Lord. And Michael Ironside is just tough looking, sinister, and just kind of has an imposing frame. I also have an imposing frame. It's hanging on my wall. It's just a frame, though. I call it Imposing Frame, and I'm offering it for sale for only $15 million. I mean, honestly, I've seen worse art sell for $15 million. But anyway, look at Michael Ironside in this movie. I looked it up, and he was like only 30 when they shot the movie, and the dude is like so manly and mature looking in the movie. I mentioned how old Michael Ironside was in the movie to my buddy Brett, who just astutely nailed it. He looked 48 years old always. I mean, I dare say I couldn't have said that so perfectly. And you know what always cheers me up when I'm down? Watching like a dumb infomercial for some stupid product. When my editing career was approaching its nadir... Yes, I know that rhymed. Yes, it's impressive. I edited some like commemorative coin infomercials. It was so painful to edit. Like there was no creative aspect of it whatsoever. But anyway, I generally love the infomercials for products that are like so not necessary. And it's always like, don't you hate when you get your balls stuck in a bear trap? And it's like, no, that never happens. I remember one for an umbrella that like collapsed in on itself, and the person in the infomercial like collapses it as she gets into the car, so it just kind of slithers down the side, and she doesn't really get wet. But first, I'm sure the product doesn't even really work. Probably when you collapse it, like a bunch of water falls on you or some shit. Infomercial products are generally shitty. And the second, it's raining, you asshole. You may get a little wet, yes, but lucky you have an umbrella. All I have is this pack of Fig Newtons. And speaking of not getting wet, I went to this rain room installation at LACMA back in the day. It was like a dark room with actual kind of water falling over. But the gimmick was, as like the thing detects a human walking around, the rain would stop around that person as they move through. It was kind of cool. It was like being in rain, but you're like protected, almost like a superhero or something. I mean, it wasn't like completely perfect. Sometimes an errant drop would like hit me or something, but it was a very cool idea. But I remember my grandma, as she got older, she kind of got obsessed with the QVC channel. She was also obsessed with the minister, Oral Roberts, who also got into some scandals, some involving money. I tell you, never trust televangelists or evangelists, but you can trust Linda Evangelista, okay? And also, bottom line, never trust any man named Oral. Although the name could work if his last name was like the previously mentioned Lord, Oral Lord. But yeah, my grandmother like ordered a ton of fruit dehydrators, and it was like, I think that one is enough. There's not like a lot of fruit in here, you know? And I want to say she smoked Raleigh cigarettes, and those came with like little fake money bucks inside that you could save and spend on products from the Raleigh Tobacco Company. I remember I would gather like all the money together and see what it qualified for in the product catalog. Usually like, you know, pretty good things would like take a ton of bucks, and by the time you accumulate enough bucks, you probably have cancer. But I think I got a pocket knife or something, and again, I miss you, Mimi. And of course, you can't mention infomercials without mentioning the king himself, Billy Mays, who famously pitched so many products, usually opening the commercial with, Billy Mays here! I remember him pitching the cleaning product, OxyClean. But my favorite is the Tool Bandit. It opens with Billy Mays saying, tired of fumbling with your tools or wasting time trying to find them? What? Do you have, like, Parkinson's or something? It's like, hey, here are the tools. They're all in the toolbox. How often are you not able to find tools? Clean your garage up, motherfucker. But yeah, the infomercial for the Tool Bandit, it's like this ridiculous-looking magnetic band you put on your arm to keep supplies near you. Like, one guy has a bunch of nails and shit on it and a hammer on his armband. It's like, that looks way more convoluted than simply pulling the stuff out of this box here. It's worth watching just to see the ridiculous amount of shit they pack onto the armband. It's like, you're using all those fucking tools? But yeah, Billy Mays, I guess, ran into a cocaine problem, and that's something that the Tool Bandit won't help with. Although I guess you could, like, keep your coke on there. I don't know. Anyway, he ended up dying of a drug-related heart attack. He had an amazing over-the-top personality, though, just completely committed to pitching the products. And that's the way you have to pitch them, man. You've got to give it your all. It's like, think about Charlie Sheen during his, like, winning era, and that's, like, the appropriate model for an infomercial spokesman. But yeah, I was like slightly high the other day and a Billy Mays infomercial came on. I think it was for like Mighty Mend, which is like for mending rips or some shit on fabric. I don't know. But I was like in my best Cheech and Chong, I think you're dead, man. And it was a little weird seeing a dead guy advertising some product, but obviously the family signed off for it. Still a bit maudlin, though. And at first I thought it was like an AI Billy Mays, which of course you know will be here soon. And about AI, there was a great little ending paragraph in an article I read about some companies kind of pushing back against the scooping up of unlimited information from the internet. And here's that paragraph. But there's also a lesson here for the AI companies who have treated the internet as an all-you-can-eat data buffet for years without giving the owners of that data much of value in return. Eventually, if you take advantage of the web will start shutting its doors. And what a clever line from a 1995 article, 1995, holy shit, in the New York Times about the internet and online distractions. Oh, what a tangled web, this internet. But yeah, the AI, the internet, the smartphone, it's all dark shit to me, man. So let's end on some darkness. So my buddy at work, like I said, had a vape, and goddammit, I ended up going to buy another vape the other day. But I won't get sucked into it again. Pardon that pun. It's just a one-off. I'm not going to get trapped in that shit. I'll buy some gum, and then I'll just taper that off. But anyway, I was walking into the vape store. I think I had a drink before, and one of the greatest songs ever was playing, and it was like the perfect soundtrack for the situation. It was the Beatles' I Want You, She's So Heavy from the 1969 album Abbey Road. I mean, how good is this song? I just kind of hung out at the store, slowly rocking my head to the song, especially the instrumental ending. I mean, there's nothing better than that. The lead guitars are amazing. It's got a Paul McCartney bass line that will blow your ass off. And at this point, the Beatles were imploding, and so was the world. The song is so catchy, but there's such a darkness to it. It's almost like a satanic melody. But it completely mirrors the times, you know, Charles Manson, LSD, Vietnam, assassinations, the Rolling Stones at Altamont. I mean, the ending just builds and builds, and there's just a noisy element that increases as the song continues, and it's just like the best musical madness there is. The song is so goddamn good, but if you really want your mind blown, please listen to the solo track of Paul McCartney playing bass on the song. I mean, I think they played the song straight through, so there's like some flaws, but the improvisational nature of McCartney's bass line, along with some of the fucking note flurries, is just insanely great. It's like, okay, that's perfect. So anyway, I'm going to go to LA this weekend. I'm sure it'll be fun. Let's see what happens, okay? And here's a little bit of the ending of She's So Heavy, a pale comparison, but you know, you got to give it a shot, right? Na, 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 na. Na 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 na